Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. Ladies and gentlemen, KSCO presents the Dr. Future Show. If you would like to join in our show today, you can call us at 831-479-1080. That's 831-479-1080. And now, your host, Dr. Future. Why do
we never get an answer? Hey, folks, welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. You know, in this hour, it's going to be a little different than just talking about tech, though this does have a very strong tech connection in the storyline. It has to do with us being a melting pot people and getting along with others. And, you know, we're struggling now with what Trump just said about Muslims. And so in the interest of such things, and being a Christmas Hanukkah time, I thought we'd bring on somebody not just born this time of year, but someone who has intimate experience with all these things and is a techie and a woman as well. I want to introduce you to Wendy Sue Noah in L.A. currently. We knew her when we were working with Virtual Worlds. Virtual Worlds back in 97, which was a whole new format for connecting on a global scale. Mrs. Future and I and Wendy, we're all in this together, this whole idea of being able to connect via the internet globally with each other. And she was a pioneer with Bruce Damer, who many of you know from previous shows.
It was really pre-internet.
Well, it was this the beginning, 14.4 modem, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Wendy, are you there?
I am here. Thank you so much for that introduction.
Yeah, I thought so, because, you know, we have a deep history into global communications, if you will, with the internet and the pioneers of the net. So getting along with others, I think, is an important topic, and I think you have a few insights to share with us on that.
Well, getting along with others, how interesting to invite me into your show with such an open, embracive format.
Thank you.
First of all, I'd like to thank you and Sun so much for this invitation, and you are both still very dear to my heart. You guys are great, and I love what you're doing. Thank you.
Oh, thanks.
You too, sweetie. Well, let's start at the beginning.
Yeah, you're a nice Jewish girl from New Jersey.
That beginning or MatchCom beginning?
That's right. That's how you began before you came out to the West Coast, right? You went to school.
Yeah, let's go East Coast, West Coast.
UMass.
Okay. Wow, Al, you do your research. That's correct. Okay, so I'm an East Coast escapee, I call myself.
Okay.
I was 27 years old when I left Boston. I graduated from UMass Amherst. My degree was in mass communications. I did grow up in New Jersey. I couldn't take the winters, and it was just too conservative for me. I was not fitting in any square peg or box.
Right. You were one of the pioneering spirit. You had to go and create your own world somewhere or find out what else was out there.
Exactly. You understand.
Sure. A lot of people come to California for that, for sure.
Exactly. And so I left family and friends behind. I took a one-way ticket when I was 27 years old without knowing one person in California.
Yeah, you had a job, right? You were working for communications.
Yeah, you were
a
very successful career woman.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that helped
yes,
you
Capricorn.
Get a place out here and originally San Jose, and then you wanted to get into San Francisco, right?
Yes, exactly. So I started in San Jose, moved up to Palo Alto, and then I took the big leap into the dot-com world and moved to San Francisco.
Sure. The faith of the new startup, right?
And and socially started connecting with the Anon Salon crew, which we know.
Yes,
very.
I miss them. Do you guys still go there?
Oh, sure. Well, it's different. You know, of course, it's mutated. But the people that helped create the Anon Salon, which I might add, folks, was one of the pioneering places for the internet in San Francisco, is where internet and art interplayed very much with each other. It was a place where artists and geeks could hang out, as well as other kinds of people. It was a nice social mixing ground. You, Wendy, what brought you to the Anon?
Well, actually, so what happened was I was introduced to the whole dot-com internet world, but in this early stage, they even called it multimedia, you know, before it was even like internet.
CD-ROMs.
CD-ROMs, exactly. And believe it or not, I'm just thinking of this one Anon Salon event I went to right when we were getting Match.com together before it was even launched on the internet.
Yes.
And I was next to Craig Newmark, who was doing Craigslist. And we had little booths at the Anon Salon introducing people to our worlds.
Right. And people were like, what? Classified ads and what? You use a computer and what? You can meet people with like
a computer screen? Was he into
that then?
Was Craig obsessed with Craigslist at that point yet?
At that point, he was really adorable because he was just seriously trying to find a means for San Francisco people who were into this multimedia tech world to come together. It was really very city focused. It was specifically for San Francisco before it became this big worldwide site.
Yeah. Craig has always been very interested in the San Francisco community, and then his success was something that he was able to share with every community around the world.
It spread, how amazing. Local meme can spread. Yeah, so you were there. I can see why you might have felt more at home there.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. And also with Bruce Damer and you and our, what we used to call, I don't know, I think you still say you call it your cyber tribe.
Absolutely. Yeah. The 90s was the emergence of the cyber tribe, right?
Absolutely. Oh, I just loved being in the beginning of it all. And son, you're right. We're talking about relationships and, you know, embracing all people because our planet's becoming so much smaller with social media, with the internet. We're all connected. We always have been, but now we can see the connection more clearly and we can magnetize through social media to like-minded people. But with Match.com, the interesting thing for me, and I get laughs to this day.
Okay, now for the audience, what is the your connection with Match? .com, which is the first matchmaking site on the net, pretty much.
And the biggest, most successful, right?
Well, good point. Before I even get into my introduction to Match.com, I'm sitting with my children at our local library. This is about 2 years ago now.
Yeah.
And we're leafing through the Guinness Book of World Records, which we just love seeing, you know, different records. There's Match.com. Match.com is the largest matchmaking service on Earth. And I'm like hyperventilating. You might get to like, Mom, why aren't we rich? You know?
Yeah. Well, you were there too early, I think.
Listen,
Before we get into
to answer that question, which is really fascinating and lots to do with what we're talking about on the show today, we're going to have to take a little break. So stay tuned and much more with Wendy Sue Noah and the Dr. Future Show. We'll be right back.
Okay, welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. On the line, we have Wendy Sue Noah, a cyberspace pioneer, one of our original Cyber Tribe members, you might say, in the early days of the internet and interactive media and connection with others.
Wendy Sue, you are a community angel. You know, that's how I think of you. You're really very instrumental in creating a deeper understanding of people in various relationships, starting from Match.com and being a very strong member of the San Francisco art technology scene in the very early days, in the most formative Think Different era. Mm-hmm. Here we were going to parties, creative people, cross-pollinating ideas.
It was a pioneering time. And tell us, there was a transition for you, right? What, there was a big thing that happened when you were at one of the big events.
Yes. And so do you want to move into that or should
Or do you have a comment first on your cyberspace days and then I think we can move into the next phase?
Yeah, we're very interested in your book and really talking about your experience to the degree that you want to focus on that.
Okay, well, absolutely. Just real briefly, then I'll just synopsize about Match.com. It was about 12, 13 of us in a basement in San Francisco, and we were literally pooling our pennies together for coffee. I was told if we didn't get investors within 6 months, I'd be out of work. And I left a nice cushiony corporate job for this, and my parents thought I was California crazy.
I bet.
It was the best thing I've ever done, but I did everything, wore a lot of hats, got a lot of experience. And what happened was through Match.com and then onto Virtual World, where we became more friendly, what happened to me was I got kind of lost in this, like, life was almost too good. Not almost, okay. For me, I was living my dream life. I lived in North Beach with one of my best friends right on Telegraph Hill. I had Koi Tower out of my bay windows. Do you guys remember?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah.
I mean, I had a beautiful apartment. I had a lovely roommate. I had millionaire friends and struggling artists for friends.
Yeah, you were living the dream. You're living the California dream. You had made it.
And so what happened is I turned 30 years old. My birthday's on Christmas Eve. As you mentioned, this is the month of my birthday, so I'm a Jewish woman born on Christmas Eve.
With other people getting more presents than you every year. That's funny.
It's very interesting. That's a whole other story, but I get that, you know, it's all good, right?
Yes. Yeah, it's all perfect.
And so what happened was it was my Christmas Eve birthday, and I turned 30 in North Beach in my apartment. And it was the first time ever in my life I actually had a party on Christmas Eve, because most people are with their families, and it's been a very lonely birthday life for me. So when I turned 30, I don't know if you guys were there. I think you were, but it was like a big party. There was like 40, 50 people who came to a Christmas Eve birthday party.
Yeah, you were the toast of the town.
So what happened to me, Son and Alan, and whoever is listening, is that I had an epiphany where I just said, oh my gosh, you know, life is too good. I didn't come to this earth at this time and take this birth to be lost in La La Land. This is before I landed in L.A. But
the true La La Land.
This is like, be careful what you wish for, right? And if you don't appreciate your gifts, boy.
That's a mantra for me now.
In hindsight.
And so, what did you do?
Well, before that, like, I just want to mention that the one before you went to this transition, we knew you, and we actually went down to L.A. and partied in L.A. and actually did the first webcast of Martin Scorsese. Remember that?
That's right. Oh, there we were at the American Film Institute when Martin Scorsese was being presented with his Lifetime Achievement Award. And we were the hot San Francisco web team.
With Kitty and Frank.
Yes, right. Kitty and Frank had gotten the contract to produce the webcast, and we were producing
that was
the website.
The best moment
was filming people.
The best moment of you.
Tell us about the best moment of you was
when Stephanie went into the main party. We weren't allowed to go to the main party, first of all. We were separated out from all the A-list celebs.
Yeah, we were just working
press. We were
press.
The workies, right? The techies. But we had remote control cameras in the party, and we had a beautiful woman as part of our team who actually infiltrated the party, went in, grabbed Scorsese, and brought him out to show him us doing the first webcast of a major Hollywood event.
And there you were.
And you were right there.
Sitting at the screen, knowing exactly what to show him.
You were the person that got to show Martin Scorsese email for the first time.
That is quite an honor, isn't it? I still have the shivers when I think back to this.
Mm-hmm. That was fantastic. We were on a roll at that time. It was in this magic that what happened next to you is you're about to share.
So thank you so much. That's quite an entrance. Mm-hmm. So this, again, was my 30th year, this visit with Martin Scorsese. It was soon after my birthday, and life continued to get better and better for me professionally, personally, except I felt like I was missing something on a spiritual level. So I started praying for a spiritual master. Go ahead, son, say it again. Be careful what you wish for, right?
It's all right. She was in a Haight-Ashbury cult.
I was always telling you that, my dear friend. But, you know, you can't escape your fate, and you only have time for your destiny. So you got to go where you're called.
Oh, thank you. I love that. So I started praying for a spiritual master, and what happened was, and this is in my book that I just published, my memoir.
What's the name of your book?
Oh, it's called Real Eyes, like eyes, nose, Real Eyes, Faith. And so there's a double entendre, real eyes and to realize.
Real Eyes, Faith. Okay, so
All right, so here you are. You're at the top of your game, and you're looking
you feel
for
like,
spiritual
oh, what's missing now? True
guidance,
spirituality, some kind of
deeper connection with the significance of life.
There's got to be more than this.
Thank you so much. And what happened, and I'm telling you this because it makes more sense to people out listening and even to people who know me as well as you do. Mm. I had three messengers during my 30th year that led me to believe that I really needed to do something drastic and change my life. And the first one was an astrologer I met at a party, and he did my chart. Mm. And he was like, he put his hands over mine. He said, I can't charge you for this. I feel honored to tell you that you came here for a reason. You're here to spread love. and you need to get moving, you know? Mm-hmm. And then I had an aura reading or an aura picture taken, and the woman who took my picture, she put me in the back room with her, and she said, I very rarely see this essence of purple in the aura. Do you have a spiritual master to work with? And then the third person is a clairvoyant who was also a good friend who did readings for me and Barbara, my roommate. And she started laughing, cracking up. And I remember telling you this, son, because you said this has happened to you as well. But the clairvoyant said, Wendy, I said, why are you laughing, Sharon? She said, Wendy, I've never seen so many angels around one person. You must be here for a reason. So I was like, okay, I need to stop playing around. I'm 30. Things are getting too good for me. So I'm going to keep praying for this spiritual master.
Yeah.
And guess what? I met him.
So as soon as you asked the universe for this, one appeared. Go figure, huh?
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, purple or violet in the New Age cosmic mythology is Saint Germain of the Violet Flame, transmutation.
And the I Am mythology of self-manifestation, self-realization manifestation.
Mount Shasta based. Anyway, just for point of reference.
So. Ooh, wonderful. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I am violet light. I mean, I feel it. Oh,
so
I see.
You have to transform energies from one form to another, which is part of your story from what I can see. So this spiritual master, how did he first appear to you?
So this is what happened. And again, this may sound a little out there, but I'm telling you.
It's all right. I expect the out there stuff for spiritual masters.
You know, we say you can't make this stuff up. Reality is stranger than fiction.
Want to know the truth.
Okay, so tell it like it is. What's the
spiritual detectives here.
And by the way, we're about 2 minutes away from our hard break. So
yes.
Okay, well, thank you for that, because I'll start then with Bruce Damer and I. We're doing a virtual world presentation in Los Angeles. And
yes,
I wasn't going to go because I didn't really have the money or whatever. And he begged me, come on, Wendy, we have a room in L.A., just come. And let's go do this presentation for Virtual Worlds together.
Yeah, Bruce Damer was the maestro of that world.
In L.A., mm-hmm. I had a vision, and I saw this quote-unquote spiritual master.
On the airplane on the way down?
Yeah, I went into, like, you know how you go half into sleep, but you're still awake because it's only an hour flight. So it's kind of like that mid-consciousness place.
The alpha zone.
And that's what a face appeared to you.
Yeah, Alpha Zone. And he came very clearly to me. I saw his face before I met him. I still see it. It was a side profile, and he was laughing. And I knew he was somebody I was going to meet, and I did.
Did he ever look you in the eye in that vision?
No, not in the vision. He didn't.
All right. So you had a psychic precognitive experience, and then you met this person. And I know you valued highly that kind of sixth sense perceptual awareness as a sign of spiritual presence.
Yeah. So
right.
So the meeting. Exactly. So you actually met him shortly after that at this conference. Can you tell me the scene when you met him? Were you and Bruce on stage or something at that time? And was he listening to you?
Also,
hard stop.
Okay, we do.
We have 30 seconds before I have to cut you off, so.
Yeah.
Well, let me tell you the three warnings I told you about, or not warnings, the three get yourself together, you're here for a purpose kind of thing, and then this vision made me think that I was supposed to do this blind faith.
Blind faith, yes, okay. So you put blind faith to the test. You trusted your own awareness of your own belief, your own psychic capacities, and you found it coming true. Okay, folks, we're going to come back after this break for more of this story. Stay tuned, Dr. Future Show. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. We're talking with Wendy Sue Noah on her new book,
Real Eyes.
Faith. Now, at the point of the story, we went down to the Seagraph Computer Festival where Bruce and you were on the stage talking about virtual worlds and global communications and connecting and all that kind of stuff. And in the back of the room was this spiritual master that you saw in a vision on the airplane over there. And he actually was there in the room listening to your talk. Is that right?
That is correct, Al. Yes.
Uh-huh. Now, could you describe him for the audience? Was he a...
The interesting thing is, because people have asked me, well, how do you know it was him? You know, a lot of people look similar, or, you know, this or that. But what was very interesting about this man is that he's a black man full of freckles, which is very unusual. And so in my vision, I saw this black man with freckles, and I remember looking a couple times like, are those freckles, or, you know, is it leprosy, or what is that?
Yeah.
That's funny. You know, my aunt, who was a nun, said that freckles are kisses by angels. Just
well,
for what it's worth.
My kids, because they have tons of freckles all over their face.
So you spotted him in the back.
Did he
of
have
room.
Like this hypnotic gaze that got your attention, or what? Did you talk to Bruce first?
This is how the actual connection happened. Okay. I told Bruce he needs to read my book because he's an integral part.
I've been noticing. Yeah.
Bruce made the introduction. So what happened was, at the end of our discussion, people were coming up to Bruce and I and asking questions about virtual worlds, about global connections, etc. Mm-hmm. And so Khalifa is his name. He went up to Bruce and said, "Hi, Bruce, I'm looking to build a virtual spiritual world, and I'd like some help." He said, "Oh, Wendy's our spiritual person. Hey, Wendy, come here. This guy here wants to build a spiritual virtual world."
Of course we want a spiritual virtual world. Yeah.
Wow.
So he wanted.
So you were hooked.
Yeah. So he wanted that, and so when you made eye contact with him, it was like deep. Is that?
Yeah, like really at first. It was just like, oh yes, what kind of world? And I was just talking to him. Once he started telling me about his vision, and then I started seeing how intense and deep he was. It's when I recognized him as being the man in my vision, which took maybe about 10 or 15 minutes. It wasn't right away. But I said, oh, my God, that's you. I saw you. And I started shaking. It was like an inner earthquake. I can't explain it any other way. My whole body shook, but you couldn't see it. It was all inside me.
Wow.
All right, so beyond this earth-shaking moment, my dear, you entered a world that has now become the story that you have recently published.
Yes.
I'm sort of pushing it a little forward because it's an amazing story.
Okay, but the main point.
We're not going to be able to get it all
in. Okay, the main points that I think would be of interest would be, okay, did you start dating?
Well, no, it was nothing like that. And it's funny because a lot of my friends ask me, too, about that part, the romantic, the usual male-female. But what happened is there was none of that. He's 17 years older than me, and he's not my type on a romantic level, but I believed he was my spiritual master. I believed that. And that was my blind faith before I realized real faith. So,
father figure also, no doubt.
He had four other wives, so I was his fifth wife. And
he had four wives already? Really? Was he Mormon? Or
No, it was a cult. I entered a cult. And he was the master of this cult. And all of us, I mean, so he told me he had four wives that were following the spiritual path that he wanted to build the spiritual virtual world for.
So it's interesting. Well, it's almost like you invoked this guidance system for you so that you could get very discerning about the difference between fooling yourself and allowing something to answer your prayers versus being in what you now call true faith. And maybe we could just, like, the story is so rich. I really feel people should look into the book, which is on your website, which is wendysuenoah.com. But the thing that I am most interested in, Wendy, is for you to fast forward to where you are now.
Well,
with your...
Well, I make sure we want to include that, but I would like to ask you a couple questions before we go to the present, if I may, Mrs. Future.
You may, of course. I'm just knowing that we may not even get to the...
Okay,
I
will speed up the story a little bit in my own inimitable way. Yes.
Okay.
So I just want to know, though, did he tell you he had four wives before you?
Yes, I was his fifth wife. And
he told you before you got married?
That's correct.
Okay, so you went into this with open eyes to some extent.
Yes, but I was marrying my spiritual master. I wasn't marrying, like, a husband, a romantic partner. I know it's very hard for most people to understand, but
it's
I
was a little more like a nun who sees herself as the bride of Christ or something.
Okay.
More like that. Yes, thank you.
So my geek mind wants to know, did you actually build a virtual spiritual world ever?
Oh, actually that...
Did it ever happen?
The cult ended up falling apart, including his vision of the virtual world, and he had many big visions. Yeah. He was quite a visionary, actually.
So it was a come online, kind of.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right,
yeah,
so you became wife number five, and I know since then you've had five children.
They were all
fill in the blanks.
This is basically what happened. So, I was the only white wife, so he was black and the other four were black, and so there was some racism against me being a white wife, so I...
Well, you're Jewish also. I mean, white and Jewish. Yeah.
You took the words right out of my mouth. So I had that Jewish white wife. So I was the white slave of the family. I was barefoot and pregnant.
And so you were the baby maker for the family. None of the other wives had any babies, just you?
Actually, that is correct, but two of the other younger wives, they all went in age. It's very strange, but oldest to youngest, the first was the oldest, and then I was the youngest, and each wife that came in was younger.
Yeah.
But my point is the two younger wives that could still have children before me, they tried and tried, even went to a fertility clinic, so that added to their anger against me because I was a baby maker and they couldn't have children.
Well,
okay. Well,
so I just want to say you processed so many different kinds of rejection and envy and prejudice, and you're like the mirror of all of those kinds of things that victims of the world lament. I'm very interested in you in real time sharing some of the wisdom that you gained without us having to
go through the whole story.
Yeah, without shortchanging the book, because it's such a rich experience, and you know it's very well written, and I really encourage people to buy the book and read it.
And I think the idea that he wasn't just a spiritual teacher, but also an abusive man was very interesting. You know?
Oh, yes, absolutely. He's a sociopath for sure.
Yeah, and he actually beat all of you, right? I mean, he was
including the kids and a few of the other wives. Yes.
Yeah,
and kind of what saved you really was your motherly instincts.
Oh yeah, my polar bear mother instinct. That's what saved me and my children. Absolutely, but that's toward the end. But to answer your question, because it's so powerful, son. I grew up Jewish in Edison, New Jersey, where me and Heidi Selzman were the only Jews. So I grew up with anti-Semitism, you know, to being the only white wife in a black family who could have babies. So I've dealt with so much ism.
Yeah.
All kinds of ism. I don't even know what it all is.
And here you are really cheerful about it. You are a living example of overcoming the obstacles that you didn't even intend to sign up for.
Yeah, so how did you get out barefoot and pregnant with five kids?
So thank you for asking, because what happened is my darling, and you've met my children, and my darling oldest daughter, Ocean Noah, she said to me, she was about 8 years old, and we were in San Pedro, that's where he had the cult where we all lived.
Down in L.A.
And Ocean said to me, Mom, I never want to grow up to be like you.
Your kid said to you?
My oldest child said that to me. Mom, I never want to grow up to be like you.
Did he say why?
She said what? Shocked and hurt. Again, son said mother instinct. I think you can't help it. When a baby comes through you and you give birth, you know, you're attached, right? You can't help it.
And it tells the truth to you.
Well, why would you say that to me? I was already hurt and offended. She's like, I'd never want to marry a man who beats me and yells at me all the time. And then I realized, this is crazy. I'm raising children to see me as this victim, which I'm not. And I don't ever embrace being a victim. Even when I was in the marriage, I didn't embrace it, even though it was hard, because I felt victimized so much. But my point was that when Ocean asked me that, that's when I woke up and said, you know what? I am not going to put up with any more of this abuse. It was like my wake-up call.
So before then, you could excuse
him,
it.
He didn't
because
like the challenging.
Yeah.
So he threw me out on the street.
Because you challenged him and his authority? And you called him special names, right? You requested to call him, was it Lord or something like that?
Yeah, Lord Khalifa was what we called him, or I don't even remember anymore, but yes, Lord was his usual name, and all the wives called him that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, right.
Okay, so you stood up to him.
So you woke up with your daughter's recognition that she didn't want to be like you because she didn't like the way that you were so victimized by his abuse.
And he threw you out?
And yeah, so it took a while for him to do that. Him and another wife who hated me the most, the next to youngest wife before me, the two of them planned, because she worked for a law office in L.A., in Santa Monica. So the two of them, how they finally did it, and my story reveals all of the details, but they got a temporary restraining order against me. And I basically had 15 minutes with a police escort to gather a few of my belongings, and then I was out in the street.
And your kids?
My kids were taken to Lancaster, which is in the desert. It's about an hour and a half from downtown L.A., where Khalifa has a sister who has a home there.
So she was kind of keeping them away from you there.
Yeah, exactly. I called it kidnapping, but, you know, when I had a temporary restraining order against me, the police was like, well, it looks like you're being retaliatory, or whatever that word is.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, we have to go to another break, Wendy. Let's continue from that point when we get back.
Yes.
Because you were suddenly practically homeless.
Yes.
With five kids.
I was
devastation,
homeless.
Wow. From devastation to where you are now, which is relative victory. All right, folks, this is Wendy Sue Noah and the Dr. Future Show. We'll be right back.
Okay, welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. We're talking to Wendy Sinoa, where we left the story. Wendy had been the fifth wife of a black cult leader in San Pedro, L.A., and the only white woman with five kids in the cult. And they tried to take the kids from her and kicked her out, and she retaliated.
She did not retaliate. She was accused of retaliating.
Well, Wendy, why don't you tell us what happened?
Yes, thank you. So it's complicated, and I don't want to get too bogged down by details because I do want to get into the real miracles that occur with real faith.
Absolutely. That's the thing. But I want to know what that must have been the difficult pain to be separated from your kids and then be homeless at the same time. That must have been the worst.
Quite honestly, when I was writing the book, the memoir, I had to scream, yell, hit things, cry. I couldn't believe what I went through. But when I was going through it, all I knew is I had to get my kids away from this monster.
Sure.
On September 29th, 2007, that was the day that I was homeless, penniless, and childless.
Wow. Did you feel...
I celebrate on that day. It's my anniversary. My kids think I'm crazy, but it's my anniversary of freedom. Because just like someone who's addicted to drugs, let's say, and then they're clean, that day they celebrate because that day they've regained themselves. That was the day I found my real faith, and it's in my heart. I have God right here, or the all that is, whatever you choose to call it.
Sure.
I discovered when I had nothing of this world, that's when I turned to something much greater than me.
Was it a sudden experience, or how did the revelation of this happen to you?
Yeah, well, actually, that's a really good question. I can't say anything was really sudden. Of course, being homeless, penniless, and childless in one day, that was very sudden. And the other thing, which, again, details in my book, Khalifa had all his wives change our American names. So I had a Muslim name.
Oh.
I didn't even have my name of Wendy Sunoa. I was Tawaz Abdul Rahim.
Was he Muslim himself? Or?
No, he's not. He was a black. He grew up, I think... I'm not really even sure of his background, but...
He created his own religion, though, obviously.
He means to serve God, and that's why he chose that as a last name.
Yeah. Okay, so you were out on the streets, and you had this change, this thing that happened where you...
Okay, well, so basically, the first thing that happened was that because I was in a cult, we weren't allowed to have any friends or contact. If you remember, you guys...
You got to cut him off from reality, yeah.
Yeah, I think you asked me if an alien... No, Charles asked me if an alien abducted me or something. But the point is I had no friends. So I turned to one of the wives, who is now like a spiritual mother to me. Mm-hmm. She's the first wife, and she's now 83. I called her and said, I was thrown out, and I don't know what to do. I don't want to sleep on the street, you know? So she invited me to her study, and that's all I needed was a roof over my head.
Well, the first wife who divorced him took you in.
Yes.
Wow. That shows you some real friendships can evolve, even in these kinds of circumstances.
Huh. Absolutely. Actually, three of the wives had left him by the time they threw me out. It was only Khalifa and one of his wives left, and me.
Right. Yeah.
So anyway, the point is that once I got into her study, and I realized I was basically, you know, in a bad place, I just started praying. And I never really had lessons like this is how you should pray. I just talked to God or the all that is. I just started not crying and poor me, not feeling bad for myself, but just like, OMG, what do I do now?
WTF, as they would say today. Well, so when you prayed, did you get any response from all that is? Did you get any miracles?
Internal, like that internal earthquake with Khalifa, but the response was, for the first time, I just felt okay. I had no idea what was going to happen to me or the children, but I knew that we were in good hands, in God's hands. I felt like I was being hugged by angels, if that makes sense.
So you have felt an embrace, a kind of a loving cosmic embrace, if you will.
Oh, thank you, Al. Cosmic embrace. So, yeah, and then I got free legal help here in L.A. There's a family law firm that's nonprofit, Harriet Buhai. They took my case and they helped me fight for my children. And they told me, Wendy, you know, this doesn't look good. I just want to let you know, a homeless woman fighting for five children who are in a nice home, it's going to be kind of unusual for a judge to take these children out of a home to give them to a homeless mother. So my case didn't look very good, but I said, I'm going to fight. You know, I'm just going to fight it. And that's all I could do. I won. I won full custody.
Well, congrats.
Wow.
Thank you.
Congrats. What a journey.
Yeah. And so you wanted to sort of bring it home with now the miracles that you have received and the things that you've discovered through all of this. And now clearly you've had this incredible experience that is going to ground you in how to be a real agent of sharing the love. Where are you at now?
Yeah.
How is it working out?
And the miracles. Son wants to know about the miracles.
Yeah, thank you so much for bringing presently. And there's so much, of course, in between what I just ended on to hear. But just to let you know, there's a couple things I really realized through this experience. And the blind faith that I experienced, I realized that many people on the planet today, especially here in our country, are in blind faith because they're born and raised in whatever religion or faith they're in, and they don't question it. And it is the way it is. And if you don't believe this, you're going to hell, and they don't question that, right?
And you suggest thinking for yourself, perhaps?
Well, I had to get whipped on the ground homeless. But my belief is, whether or not you agree with what you were brought up with, to be able to say, okay, is this blind faith, or am I actually using my mind and my heart to believe this? If you believe it from your heart, then that's perfect. But if you are like brainwashed, I was brainwashed. If you're brainwashed by society or your religion or culture or whatever, then you're not thinking for yourself. Do you understand?
But how can you tell the difference? I mean, really, we started the show with a discussion about the difference between authority and belief. And we've been talking about lies and secrets. And, you know, there's so many ways that people don't know the contents of their own mind. And they believe things thinking they're true when there's a deeper layer that they're just missing. Like, you seem like you've really made a transition in that department.
Well, yeah, because you know what? I was cult bait. It's not surprising that I ended up in a cult. And Bruce and I discussed this. I came to California kind of like open and looking and searching. And so I was the opposite of someone who was born in a religion and that's all they believe. I was the complete opposite. So what happened to me is I got to witness through this cult experience what it's like to be in blind faith and not be in touch with your heart or your mind, just believing. I believed what he said was the truth because God showed me him in my mind, my third eye. You know, this God must want me here because look at these beautiful children. Would he bless me with these beautiful children if I wasn't where he wanted me to be? Do you understand?
Well, yeah, it sounds like to me you are trusting the perfection of the way it all worked out. And yet I question whether or not there was a point earlier on where your blind faith was something that you created for yourself because you allowed your prayers to be answered in this way. Maybe you could have taken different steps and, you know, had an equally desirable result.
Oh, absolutely. Probably much more desirable. Absolutely. And that's what we do. We put pieces of our world together and make sense of it. So it isn't a good or bad thing to be in blind faith. If we're going to do a good or bad thing, the bad thing is that you're not actually honoring the beautiful soul that you are, who you are, what your mind and what your heart wants you to do while you're here in your body, you see.
So it's an issue then of self-esteem. I mean, did you know that you had low self-esteem before this all began, or did you...
Only in hindsight.
Did you get that because of the things you had to endure, or how come you were, as you call it, cult bait?
Yeah.
It was more, I was looking for an answer to how to reach God, all that is. I knew I took this birth. I knew I had a high birth and I was here to do things. I've just always known that. It's been in my blood. And so I didn't want to get lost in the muck. So I was looking for an answer. And the self-esteem thing, son, that's very interesting because a lot of people say to me, oh, you must have had low self-esteem. But I really never, I don't know. I mean, of course, when you beat me for the 10 years, I had low self-esteem. But I didn't enter because I had low self-esteem. I entered because I wanted to serve God and do what I thought my karma or my dharma was.
Hmm. Well, did you get tricked?
Yeah, I think so because he turned out to be a sociopath.
So let me ask you this then. You think God is ever out there?
Well, I think God is whatever your heart.
Yeah.
This is what I'm talking about with the blind faith and the real faith, because God is in all of our hearts. God is.
So it's always in there. It's always in there for sure. God is always in there for sure. And out there, well, that's where it's questionable.
Yeah, questionable is a great way of saying it. That's where we have to really look and question and listen to our heart. I even recommend putting a hand on your heart, taking a few breaths, and letting your heart speak to you, because we get so many messages from religion, from the news, from our family and friends, but what's real for you is in your heart. And meditation, breath, holding your heart, that's an important way to reach who you really are.
The heart path, yes. It's a direct dial system to the divine that way, too.
Oh, direct dial. Oh, that's beautiful.
Not that anyone knows what dials are anymore, but you know what I mean.
I know, actually, that's true. I feel so old-fashioned just hearing that.
Hey, listen, in our last minute,
after the blind faith part, I want to say that once I tuned into my heart, that's where miracles really happened. And right now, I'm running a home business and supporting my family, social media with a conscience.
And what's your website?
WendySunova.com. And I work with nonprofits, and I work with Nassim Hassan on this movie called The Connected Universe.
Yeah, Nassim Harriman.
Social media to bring people together, and I feel like I'm in heaven.
Oh, good. Well, so things have turned around, and you're starting to live the dream again.
All right, amazing. Folks, Wendy Sue Noah, bless you, Wendy. Your story, Realize Faith, is awesome.
Thanks for being on the show.
That's Wendy Sue Noah, folks. You can find her online.
Love you guys. Mwah.
Mwah. You too, Wendy Sue.
Thanks for being here.
Bless you and your kids. Lots of love. This is the KSCO Santa Cruz.
Thanks for listening, folks.